You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew with me, Andrew Wiebe. I went to the with me too soon. It's just because there's one of you. There's no Matt Doyle to introduce. So it's me and the gas man, Dave Goss, here on this Thursday. It's a good day to be in the studio, Dave. There's a lot to talk about.
It's a lot to talk about. This whole soccer thing never ends.
It doesn't ever end.
Which I'm okay with. I'm extremely okay with it because that way, like, I don't know. If we were talking about college football, we'd have to talk about spring practices for 3 months.
I mean, we always have something to talk about. What we were talking about. I mean, I literally have no knowledge in that field. So it would
I'll
be tough.
I'll tell you this. Clemson and Michigan State. Nope. Clemson and Alabama are going to play for the national championship.
Good try. Is that tonight?
No, I think it's in like a week. They get like three weeks
off. That's how you know. Hey, look, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. As I said, LAFC, officially LAFC, they now have a logo, a crest, a shield. It is awesome. We will talk about that in the second segment here, along with a bevy of MLS transfer rumors, actual trades, free agency signings, combine. Bobby Warshaw going to join us to talk about what it's actually like to be down there in Fort Lauderdale with perhaps your career on the line. Of course, the U.S. men's national team roster is out, so we'll start with that one with January camp moving forward. But first, the biggest news that we will break on this show. I guess it's not breaking news, maybe for our listeners. Happy birthday to Charlie Hageman, our very special fan out in Columbus. Let that run.
It's Alvin and the Chipmunks. I just found it.
Happy birthday to you,
Charlie.
Dave Hageman hit us up and he said, hey,
coolest dad of the year.
Yeah, my son and I really enjoy your mediocre work. That's a direct quote. And he says he understands that we haven't heard from any Crew SC fans lately, probably still in mourning from that MLS Cup loss. So we dropped us a line to see if he could help out with something. His son, Charlie, he's nine. Turning nine today. Happy birthday, Charlie.
Nine's a great birthday.
He said that we're his favorite New York-based MLS-centric podcast. Great.
That's
good
the
stuff.
Niche that we've always been going
certainly,
for.
Certainly. Also, that features cats occasionally fighting. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big group, but we're happy to be number one for Charlie in that group. Hoping we can wish him a happy birthday. Yeah, we can do that. We did that. You know what else we're going to do? Got a little bit of a care package set up for I could say old Charlie, but it's more like young Charlie, right? We've got a Kai Kamara signed mini ball, so that's a good one for him. We've also got an Oyo of Michael Parkhurst, get the captain. I don't think this has a captain's armband on it.
You could paint it on.
Yeah, you could probably get a Sharpie out and put that on there. And then we also have a scarf and a beanie, a stocking cap.
David, I'm putting this out there already. Or Dave, I think that's going to be yours because that does not look like it's going to fit a child.
Yeah, it's almost like a helmet. It would
you
be like
sent
a crew
in the
helmet.
Email, so you're allowed to steal a little swag on your own.
Yeah, I don't know. Charlie's gonna hear this, and he's probably not going to want to give up any of the swag. Anyway, happy birthday, Charlie. Thanks for listening. Thanks for following the league. We hope you enjoy the off season, and we hope you enjoy next season just as much as you did this one, maybe with a happier ending.
And, Charlie, when you become a U.S. national team player, don't forget us.
That's right.
That's the future.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's get into that U.S. national team talk real quick. The roster came out 20 of 23 from MLS. Some news that goes around this. First of all, let's talk about what they're building up to. That would be games against Iceland and Canada at the end of January and the beginning of February, the 31st and the 5th. So that's what this camp is all about. Apparently, according to Grant Wall, they were called in a little bit later. It was supposed to start January 4th, and everybody's a little bit surprised when there was no roster announcement, when they weren't getting together. Apparently, the veterans on the team, according to Wall, complained about that first week being all about fitness and U.S. soccer and Jurgen Klinsmann adjusted. So that's a positive development. You think listening to the team, listening to some of the senior voices on the team as you prepare to go into World Cup qualifying. Anyway, this camp is definitely a mixture, Dave, of developmental and senior. It seems like those senior guys are there to guide the young guys, a lot of them vying for spots on that U23 team that will take on Colombia in March in that playoff for the Olympics. That's a huge, huge pair of matches for them. But let's go through some of the highlights here. Bill Hamid, Robles in goal. Robles, that is. No Jesse Gonzalez. He was rumored to be here. There's a longer story to that we'll talk about in just a second. On the back line, Kellen Acosta, Matt Beisler, Matt Miazga, Eric Miller, Tim Parker, Mark Pelosi, and Matt Polster. You can definitely see that U23 influence there. Patai Lachey, Michael Bradley, McDisker, Jermaine Jones, unattached Jermaine Jones, Darlington Nagbe, Lee Wynn, Tony Chani, and Will Trapp in the midfield. And up top, Josie Altidore, Ethan Finley. Ethan Finley, I repeat for you Crew SC fans. Charlie's got to be pumped about that one. Jerome Kiesewetter, Jordan Morris, Kiri Shelton, and Giassi Zardes up top. So a young roster.
Yeah.
What stands out to you here?
I think Chani's one that surprises me because he was called up to a Cameroon World Cup qualifier in November when he got hurt. Right during the playoff run, and you thought, okay, well, if he's getting called up to World Cup qualifiers for that team,
right.
That's a perennial World Cup, qualifier.
And he mentioned in the past, you know, he needed to talk to his mom about what to do, how to
clearly
approach
mom
this.
Is a fan of what.
Apparently, I mean,
Juergen's
this is not a cap time situation, of course.
So I think that's an interesting one because just the way he's developed in the last 2 years, if he can continue on any level, I mean, he's reaching his prime, but. He's an interesting player. Bringing Nagbe back in is fantastic to see. You want to keep him. And obviously, Ethan Finley, I think, is the exciting one. We were just talked about it. And I think the skill set that he has, which is an ability to isolate out on the wing, take a guy one-on-one, put in a good cross, use his speed, is a skill set that even if, let's just say, the speed of the game at the next level is higher, and maybe he has trouble adjusting to that, you can still have that one skill set. It's
right.
Like if you're 7'1", you go to the NBA, you're still 7'1".
Right.
He's still fast. He could still take a guy one-on-one if he can get isolated. And I just think the U.S. has lacked speed.
Right.
In a lot of times in tournaments over the last 3 years.
Certainly speed, something they haven't had. The one thing I worry about with Ethan Finley, we saw the production that he had, but you saw at the end of the season through the playoffs that his production declined, and there were a lot of times in which Greg Berhalter went to the bench for him at about the 60th minute, and you wonder, can he affect the game for 90 minutes? But at the international level, he probably won't have to.
Right,
he's probably not that kind of player at the international level.
I worry a little bit with him, the one-trick pony of are you going to try and hit the end line every time
yep.
if you never come infield, if you never cut in. So that's a little bit of a worry. Otherwise, I think it makes sense in that if you're going to bring in young players to prove themselves, you got to bring in some veterans because if a guy proves he can play center mid, it doesn't matter because Michael Bradley's playing that position.
Right.
If a guy proves he's center forward, it doesn't matter, or it might, but Josie's playing that position. So it's good that you have a few of those guys in so they learn how to play with them.
Sure.
And you see them in their actual potential position.
And to set the tone as well, Jordan Morrison here, he's listed as unattached. Morris headed on a training stint, I think is what they're calling it, to Werder Bremen, organized by, I have to think, Andy Herzog and Jurgen Klinsmann. Of course, Herzog has a long history with Bremen. He spoke about this. He had some interesting comments, Dave. You want to catch us up to speed on some of those?
Yeah, he said, our goal is to bring as many players to Europe as possible. He said, in terms of seeing how Morris performs there, the question is whether he can assert himself in a league like Germany or England. He's fast, intelligent, has endless power. He's a brawny forward. Defenders are mostly left standing when he goes into the one-on-ones. Werder don't have a player like him, but he certainly needs to refine his qualities. Listen, people are a little upset about our goal is to bring as many players to Europe as possible. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I don't either.
They see that as the place
development.
As development, the place that they can play at the highest level. It's not their job to build MLS. It's
right.
not their job to build the Seattle Sounders. Now, you don't want them actively poisoning players in situations
right.
or you know,
The fact is we have seen a lot of guys go to Europe perhaps either too early or into situations that don't suit them.
Right.
in the last 5-10 years and have seen careers stall in that manner. And that's what you don't want to happen. And I certainly don't think that Andy Herzog or Jurgen Klinsmann want that to happen for Jordan Morris. We know for sure, though, that he has a big offer on the table, rumored to be the biggest homegrown deal in the history of homegrown deals from the Seattle Sounders. And we talked about on the last show, likelihood that he'd be a starter, pretty high. Likelihood he'd get a lot of minutes, pretty high. Maybe it's a DeAndre Yedlin situation, perhaps with a little bit of a delay as far as when he came in to the league. But his talent at this point is basically unquestioned, at least in U.S. soccer circles. It's just a matter of seeing what he does in the professional game. Some other names on here that I'm excited by, Kellen Acosta. He's listed on the back line, which is a little bit worrisome. He showed so well in that box-to-box role with FC Dallas. You heard Matt Doyle on this show praising him.
But isn't that the most crowded position in U.S. soccer?
Yeah, it is.
Everyone is a holding/box-to-box mid. If he came through as a left back, he's grown and therefore physically and was able to adjust. And I agree with
at
you.
At youth levels, though, you remember he did play both. But
he plays both, yes.
Right. But he played a lot of that central midfield at youth levels.
Right. But who's the U.S. left back? And who has been the U.S. left back? I mean, those are positions where if you have a guy who's a dual holding mid fullback and can really be a difference maker. Now, if Acosta is the best holding mid, that doesn't mean you play him at left back.
And, of course, there's a difference between what he's listed at on this roster in which he's training with these guys and what he might do at the U23 level.
Matt Polster's listed as a defender on this roster. We saw him almost all season as a holding mid, a defensive mid. So I think a little of that – I think he will fill in with these veterans specifically for the games, let these guys train and play for 2 weeks, and then bring in guys that he needs to get that a game day roster.
Yeah, right? I mean, on the back line, I think it's exciting to see a guy like Tim Parker, somebody who made a lot of progress in MLS over the last half of the season and seems to have a lot of potential. You know him well from your days covering
college
soccer.
Yeah.
Matt Miazga in here, I think that's a guy we're going to see on these lists for a long time to come. Eric Miller here, of course, that's a U23 move on their part. Mark Plozzi on the back line, looks like he'll be playing outside back, you would think. And Matt Beasley here to kind of guide the group. Of course, he was a guy in the last January camp, I believe it was, that had some issues, let's say, with Jurgen Klinsmann and Klinsmann's expectations on the fitness side. Those seem to have blown over. You have to expect Beasley will have hit the gym in this offseason pretty hard. Look, there's a lot of other players in here. We can talk. I'm happy Lee Wynn is back. That's a good opportunity for him to continue showing what he's doing up top. I think, you know, that's pretty straightforward. You have a pretty clear delineation between U23 and senior players. Let's get to the goalkeepers. Congrats to Luis Robles for one, but then there's the Jesse Gonzalez situation, which is, I think some people are wondering about. There's reports on MLSsoccer.com that we've dug up. Same thing with Ivis Galarsep. Look, here's what happened. There were rumors that he was going to come in to the camp, and he accepted the invite. He did not show up to camp. The U.S. Soccer took him off that list. Sources telling MLSsoccer.com, as well as Ivis, he kind of went MIA, that they didn't hear from him. It's a young guy faced with the two different situations. We see today that he's with the Mexico U23s, which is not that surprising. It's kind of what you thought was going to happen in the first place. The U.S. call-up, in fact, was a departure of sorts for him. But there's some consternation on the part of U.S. fans over this. Personally, I don't really have a problem with it, other than the fact if in fact he didn't call U.S. Soccer and make sure that the communication was right, that's an issue. But it's a young kid with the pull and the push between the U.S. and Mexico. That's a really tough position to be in. And I honestly, while I'm not going to say I can't blame him, yes, he should have handled it better probably, it's understandable because I have to imagine Mexico was saying, hey, you go to the U.S., that's going to seriously affect your standing with us. And it's the guy who's played in Youth World Cups for them.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see the dynamic of how the two programs are going about recruiting players, whether it's as a group or individually. So that's just what's interesting is we heard that the U.S. said, hey, if your heart's telling you that you want to go to this U23 camp with Mexico, we get it. The door's still open for you. You won't be cap tied. If you think Mexico said something different to them, you know, if you go to the U.S., it's done. It's just interesting to see. We've seen a couple of guys go to Mexico as youth players. Edgar Castillo made that move. And then come and try and play for the U.S. later of, like, is that why it's happening? Because they're dropping a hammer.
Yeah.
And that's the way they're going about recruiting. Listen, we've talked about this a million times on the show. There's no answer to any of this. It's all an individual decision. It's all a personal thing.
And it's only going to increase, right? I mean, you have to imagine it's only going to increase. The amount of Mexican scouts over here, the amount of players going down to Liga MX clubs at an early age, or dual citizens, or
MLS Academy players that have dual citizenship.
Yeah, it's a tug of war. It's going to be a tug of war that I think only increases and only ratchets up.
Here's the one thing that – so we've talked about. I think the January camp has this connotation, right? The cupcake camp and all the things that it's always meant. And I think that became – a tradition at a time when most U.S. players were playing in Europe or playing somewhere overseas that didn't have a break.
Yep.
And it became this tradition of an opportunity for young players, mainly MLS, but as well as Scandinavia and some Latin American leagues, can come here and get a shot. Now that a lot of national team players are playing in MLS, shouldn't it be an advantage? Because one of the things you see with national teams is they don't have a chance to gel because they're not together that much. Yeah. Shouldn't this be an advantage that the U.S. could take advantage of? Okay, don't come in and do fitness for 2 weeks, but come in and play together and get to know each other, and you go into Copa Centenario.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say Copa Centroamericana. Centenario.
Oh, yeah. Going right in the weeds with that one.
Yeah, of course. That's where I live.
Yeah.
And you have a team that knows each other better. I just think I love the idea of finding new young players in a situation like this. But I worry that you're risking an advantage, or you're wasting an advantage that you might have by having your players in a league like this.
Yeah, I can see that. But look, if your guys aren't fully in, or they're saying, why are we there doing a week of fitness, and it's better suited for you to look at things, I think this one's also skewed. You have the U23s that you have to focus on for that playoff. So that's the way it goes. So let's talk.
You don't have fields. You don't have other fields. You don't have other coaches.
Yeah, that's true. Let's talk a little bit about who isn't here. No Sebastian Legette, no Dax McCarty, no Benny Feilhaber, no Sasha Kljestan. I don't think I'm surprised at all about Dax, Benny, or Sasha.
Right.
Now, Sebastian Legette, does that surprise you at all?
Two things. One, yes. Robles getting called up made you think maybe Dax would have. Now, I know they're different positions.
I think it's a need thing, right? I mean, if you needed more goalkeepers, you need to look at some more guys. But Sean Jones not here. That's a guy you thought might be in the mix.
That's true.
Didn't happen. But I think Jurgen has moved past those three guys in the midfield. He said, hey, look, I don't think this is not your time. We're looking for a new guard, so to speak.
Yeah.
New players. You would think Legette might be that type of guy. He's got the European pedigree to a certain degree. He had a nice season for LA, although he fell off a little bit as far as production goes at the end of it. But kind of surprising that, you know, I get why Mix is there.
Right.
But Mix's season in MLS didn't give you a ton of confidence.
I don't get why Mix is there, because he's not – I mean, he's 25. So he's entering his prime, but it's not like he's 21 and just needs the time at
international level.
Just turned 25. Yep. He did not have a good year. Is it because you think he has the right personality that you want the young players around him? I mean, is he one of these five guys from the veterans that you're saying you look at as a leader? Are you going to have the other midfielders? Are you having Fataya Losh and Darlington Nagbe and Will Trapp learning from Mixed Discord? I don't think so. So I kind of...
That's Michael Bradley, though.
And Jermaine Jones.
Yeah.
So then what's Mix's role? Why is he the one guy who's a veteran but not a, you know, why is he in here other than Jurgen really believes in him and thinks maybe he can help jumpstart him for a better season this year?
Well, that's got to be what it is. Let us know what you think about this roster. Canada's roster, to my knowledge at least, is not out yet. Doesn't look like they'll have the same sort of extended camp that the U.S. is going into right now. Remember, the first game for the U.S. In this January window or camp window or whatever you want to call it is the 31st against Iceland. So they're going to be training for a long time, and then they'll take on Canada on the 5th. At Extra Time Radio, extratimeandlssoccer.com. If you have any thoughts, concerns, questions, whatever it might be, when we come back, we're going to talk to Bobby Warshaw about what it feels like to be a player at the Combine with your career on the line.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com. or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
She's got a ticket to ride. She's got a ticket to ride.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, who's lip syncing over here. He's
loving
had this
it.
One in his head for a while.
So I think I figured it out because I've been singing this all day.
Yep.
I just moved into a new apartment. One of my roommates happens to be my cousin, and he's got a large record collection. And we were listening to some music yesterday, and I'm pretty sure someone put this in. It's one of those where I don't even remember, and yet it's been stuck in my head.
Stuck
now
in
for
your
24
head.
Hours.
Well, hopefully that got out for you there. We do have the. Some clanking going on from the radiators. Some fact-checking should be going on in this segment. Bobby Warshaw is going to join us in just a little bit to talk about what it's actually like to be at the MLS Combine, what it's like to have your profession, your career on the line, perhaps. We'll talk to him in just a second. But before, some big, big news in MLS dropping today. We will start with the schedule, which is out. Hashtag schedule is late because... Don't need it. It's out. It's in your hands. You can make travel plans. You can do whatever it is you want to do with it. Some talking points from that one. Two Heineken rivalry weeks once again. One in late May. One in late August. We've got a bunch of games on ESPN proper. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
28 of
33. I think that's what Taylor Tellman tweeted.
Yeah, something like that.
And that
Fox.
Rivalry day. The first full-on Fox game. And it's...
It's going to be the New York Derby, I do believe, or whatever it is that we have decided to call
it. Yeah, NYCFC, New York Red Bulls, a rivalry game here in the Big Apple. Whatever. I don't think it really has a go-to name just yet. Another note from this one, Dave. I know you struggled with decision day last year. Why are the games at two different times?
Well, you know what? I don't think they should be at two separate blocks. I think that they should all be played at the same time. And Andrew, if they do it again separate, I'm not even showing up.
Yeah, if you're going to leave this show, you know, you just – forever gone?
I'm not even I'm just not going
to
show
Okay. I'm going to actually have to go over to the office over here and let some of the guys know that we need to change things because they're all at one time on the final day of the season. October 23rd.
Head explosion.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's exploding. 4 p.m. Eastern. All the games we played on that day. So all those races for playoff spots, for seeding, all that stuff.
Race to Sace?
Yeah, race to Sace, I guess. We'll see where the Galaxy are at. Yeah, we'll see where they're at. So that's big news. Go check all that out. Get some tickets if you want them. Beat people to the punch. Rivalry games. All that good stuff. One team that's not on that schedule is LAFC. They do not start playing until 2018, but they now have a crest.
Delectable.
And it is beautiful. And I don't just say that because you and I know the guy who designed it, Matt Wolf, who now is out in Portland, used to live here in New York City.
We're extremely proud of him, by the way.
I'm marginally proud.
Andrew Wiebe is sitting here, and he's literally kvelling.
I don't even know what that means.
Say it.
Kvelling.
There you go.
Okay. Yes. I don't know what it means. Smooth. I hope that doesn't mean something I don't want it to mean, but it really is a beautiful crest. You know, I've seen some of the merchandise for it. That's cool. We have some to give away to you. Dave's been trying to steal it off me, but
I need one of those.
Not happening. Black and gold is kind of a muted gold, I would say. You have the Los Angeles Football Club at the top of the bottom of this crest. It's a very classic design in that sense, and then LA in the middle with a wing coming off that City of Angels, of course. Four feathers on that wing for the tenants of the club. You know all that marketing jargon they like to put with these things. Long story short, it's a beautiful logo, and I think it's something that people in LA are really going to be able to get behind. The other news here that got you even more excited, other than the
not
fact
more
that,
excited, but it gets me excited.
Yeah, okay. Will Ferrell is now a co-owner. They have like 55 owners, and they all seem to have pretty good resumes.
Right.
Will Ferrell, he's
Will
part
Ferrell,
of the group.
I will argue, is the best SNL cast member of the LAFC ownership group.
That's an honor.
So I'm just going to go out on a limb there and throw that out there.
Huge limb.
If people want to come back at us.
Hot takes.
And with a couple takes, if they have any other opinions, a big Will Ferrell fan. Mm-hmm. Don't love slapstick comedy, but I do love Will Ferrell. I think he has a great depth to his comedy that people don't talk about and appreciate.
A big sports fan as well. You often saw him prowling the sidelines at USC football games.
He did a film on HBO where he played nine different positions and manager for 10 different baseball teams during the spring training this year.
Wasn't he also in Ladybugs, which is a soccer movie, I believe?
Was he in Kicking and Screaming.
Kicking and Screaming? Yeah, okay, that's fine. Whatever.
He was like the star of that
confusing
movie.
Confusing children's
Pass to the
soccer.
Italians?
Yeah, whatever. So that's big news for LAFC. Let us know what you think about that, and tell us why you deserve this hat, perhaps a T-shirt. I'm in negotiations right now to get us some free swag. Why should we give it to you? We'll send it off. Maybe you'll be in the same boat as Charlie. Happy birthday once again, my man.
Can I just throw out there real quick what's tough is? You sent me a clip from Ladybugs to use in our previous open.
I did.
And the fact that you don't know that that's Rodney Dangerfield?
I know it's Rodney Dangerfield.
I thought Will Ferrell was in it with him?
No, I just got the name confused. There's a lot of different, you know, kiddie soccer movies, whatever. You know, that's how it goes. Look, let's get to Bobby Warshaw. The Combine starts on Friday. A lot of kids with a lot at stake, 71, in fact. Some youth internationals there, as well as a lot of college kids, the best in the country, all vying for perhaps a place in MLS, all vying to be drafted in the Super Draft on January 14th. You can follow Bobby at BWarshaw14. Bobby, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's start with at least what's on MLS fans' mind right now, which is where is the schedule? It always seems to be a little bit late. I'm more curious, though, from the players' side. Are you guys sitting around waiting for this thing? Is it actually a big deal to players when the schedule drops?
No, not at all. I don't know. I'm confused why anybody is so excited about it. But not to the players, it doesn't matter. You know, we go where we have to go. You play where you're told to play. You know where you're going next week, and that's about it.
There's no like, I have family and friends in San Francisco. I'm pumped that I'm going to play San Jose like this weekend, July 4th weekend or something. You don't even like look at it.
Yeah, I will say you do look at that part, but it doesn't make any difference to you. Whether it's in August or September, October, it doesn't matter that much. I mean, I will say there's some guys my age that have, like, weddings, you know, all their friends are getting married, so maybe they have to, like, notice where that wedding date is. But that's pretty much it.
Man, okay. A little less hoopla, let's say, than what's going on
Twitter.
Extremely
real point of view right
there.
Yeah,
that's
true.
There you go. Let's move on to the combine, because that's what we're here to talk to you about. You have a great piece, as I said, on MLSsoccer.com about kind of the player's perspective of what it's like to actually be there and go through what amounts to a 5 or 6 day job audition. Let's start at the beginning with you. You were there in 2011. When did you find out you were going to the Combine? Was it a mystery to you? How was the process of even just getting invited?
As a senior, you just kind of like wait for the list to come out. There's not much more you can do. I mean, I was lucky to have some accolades, and I thought it was going to come my way. But other than that, there's most people, you know, maybe there's 20 that expect it to come, and the other 50 guys literally just wait around for that list to come out. And then you don't even get like a – there's no like special invitation. There's no like courier that like hands you something at your door. You literally check the list when it comes out online.
There's not even a phone call. It's you see the list, and then do you have to organize your own travel? How's that all that come together?
Ooh, that part I don't fully remember, but I don't think so. I think MLS fly. You guys probably answer that better than I can. MLS flies you in. They kind of ask you what airport you want to fly in and out of, and then they fly you in, and there's a bus or like a van that picks up everyone at a specific time at the airport, and they take you to the hotel. And then once you're at the hotel, you get your room assignment, and you show up, and you live with this random person for 6 days who you've never met before in your life.
First of all, so after you finish your college season, I mean, do you keep training knowing this is coming? And did you have any buddies that you were training with that didn't get the invite?
I did. There's a couple guys on my team that did not get invited, in which case other teams also have their own individual combines. So the 75 guys get invited to Florida by MLS. But then, like, Seattle has a combine. Maybe Toronto has a combine now. Like, Real Salt Lake had a combine in Arizona my year. So there's other individual combines which you can pay your own way to and kind of, like, still fight through to make it. But, yeah, that's one of the problems with this combine. It's, like, the middle or early part of January when guys should be resting. You know, I wrote in the story that, like, I remember being in my garage with my dad, and I would, like, take 2 steps back, 2 steps forward. My dad would toss me the ball. I would, like, juggle it twice and hit it back to him. And we just did that for an hour, because what else was I supposed to do with snow on the ground, no fields around, nobody to play with in Little Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania? So that was a bit of a dilemma.
Did you feel prepared? Did you feel, you know, did you think your garage work, so to speak, got you ready for, you know, what amounts to a job interview in a lot of ways?
Well, one of the things I say in the story, too, is that, like, you don't – when you're young – I tried so hard to put the phrase naivety of youth, but Weeby was like, eh. when you're young, you like don't really realize these things, right? Like you don't realize what's on the line. So I thought I was just like, you know, I was a 21, 22-year-old kid just going out to play soccer. You like don't think about whether you're prepared or not. You're like, yeah, it's just another game. It's another weekend with friends. So I didn't really think about the minor details that I probably would think about now that I'm 27.
So you said weekend with friends, but you also mentioned you're rooming with this random person. Do you make friends? Is it like Survivor? Like, are you realizing you guys are in competition? Is there like some sort of like unions or whatever alliances that get created?
Yeah, I mean,
we've been doing this our whole lives, right? You have like state team camps, you've got regional team camps, you show up to college the first day. Like, you're totally used to this environment. I mean, it's kind of foreign, but in being foreign, it's what you're used to. You know, everyone that's at that combine has done that same weekend, you know, 20 times before in their life. And maybe it's different now. There's academies. I can't speak for the class of 2015. But for the first, you know, 17 years of MLS, these kids have been doing this their whole life. And one thing I thought was really fascinating is that when you go to breakfast, right, like you have dinner, you generally eat with your team to kind of get to learn everyone's names. When you have breakfast the next day, there's an interesting question of, did you sit with your new teammates or with the old guys that you knew, either from college or youth national teams or from youth club team? You know, do you kind of acclimate to meet your new teammates? Does that make you play better? Or does it make you play better to feel comfortable and be around the guys you've known your whole life? And I thought that was to see who picked what and how people dealt with that. I thought it was pretty cool.
How, when you get there and you're divided into teams, what does the coach say to you? I mean, I think about this almost like it's almost like an all-star game tournament in a sense. And you look at like NBA all-star games, you know, the Pro Bowl, even the MLS all-star game. You're just kind of throwing pieces against the wall and hoping that they mesh. How much actual chemistry is there on these fields? Because, look, the reputation for the combine is normally that the soccer is not particularly aesthetically pleasing, let's say.
You meet – it's like – it's literally like a big conference room, like a big dining hall, and they read off people's names on which team you're on, and then you each go to like a different corner of the dining hall. And then you sit there and you meet people's names. And the coach literally says, he's like, guys, I'm just here to supervise. I'll tell you where you're going to play, but I'm only telling you that based on what the coaches tell me where you're supposed to play. And then in terms of tactics, like we stood up, we got into like a 4-4-2, and he's like, guys, just go do your best. And I remember staying after, and this is one of the things that I think just worked to my personality and might have helped me in the games, is I remember asking him, like, coach, do we press high? Do we press low? Like, I know you want us to just go out and sort it out, but these are little things that every team should figure out. So we did end up implementing one or two tactical things that I think ended up helping the group. You know, outside of one player, we were a bunch of guys who were not expected to go that high. But our team kind of came together and performed well, and I think it helped all of us.
Who was the best player on the team?
Or who do you remember? CJ Sapong and Justin Miram each had good weeks. You know, we had, I think going into it, Kofi Sarkodie was supposed to be the highest pick, and he was. I think he ended up going 7. But we actually had a bunch of guys who overall helped their draft stock just from us playing well as a team.
So you get there and you're playing these games, and obviously, you know, it's still crazy to me that you're saying like this, the naivety of youth, because it should, to me at least, seem so obvious when you've got the likes of Bruce Arena and Siggy Schmidt and whoever else over on the sideline saying, who do we want on our team? To me, that would like ignite competitive juices immediately. What do the games feel like, and how do guys kind of react to their performances, either positive or negative?
Well, it's one of the toughest things to deal with in sports in general. You hear Kobe Bryant say it a lot with the Lakers. Like, he loves going to All-Star games. He likes being around young guys. Young guys are just, you know, wide-eyed, deer in headlights. They just go out and play. But on the flip side of that, on a day-to-day basis, it's frustrating because they don't understand what's on the line. Like, they don't understand at a professional setting if they lose, if people lose their jobs. They don't understand what's fully at stake. So it's both sides of the coin. One part of it's really good because you just go out and try things, right? You try stepovers and fancy passes, and it kind of makes you play better. But on the flip side, it's that you don't fully understand what's on the line. So I don't think the games were any more ferocious. Like, I don't think guys tackled harder or ran more. To a certain extent, it was maybe less because everyone was like a little timid and scared and didn't know what to do. So no, like around the hotel, around the dining room, in the games, you'd be surprised. It was not that fierce competitive environment. If anything, it was more of like a nervous, you know, scared atmosphere.
What was the interaction with coaches or front office player people of MLS teams?
Did you get interviewed or anything like that?
You do. You get called in, and this goes through like your team coach. You know, I think I was on Team Jabalani, and the Team Jabalani coach would approach you in the dining hall and say, hey, Real Salt Lake wants to meet with you, or LA Galaxy wants to meet with you. And there's two, if I remember, there were two hotels. There was one for the players, and then, you know, down the street was one for the coaches. So you'd get dressed, and then you'd walk over, and they'd say, hey, meet us in room 210. So you get there, and obviously, like, you should get there early, but not too early because that's awkward. You knock on the door, and there's three chairs, the head coach, the assistant coach, or maybe the head coach and the technical director, and then you sit down. And I think that those meetings, and you read about this a lot with NFL, they're more to make sure you're not like a schmuck. They don't want to make sure you're a total idiot.
Right.
There's not much you can tell them that's going to impress them. They just want to make sure they're not hiring like a total moron who's going to ruin the locker room and mess things up. But yeah, they ask you things like, you know, how's your family? Where are you from? It's not so much soccer specific questions as much as, are you a regular human being?
Is there an answer or a question that you answered that you felt you handled particularly well? Do you look back on it and think like, oh, this is the one? And follow up, did you interview with FC Dallas? Did they choose to interview you before they drafted you?
FC Dallas did not interview me. I think the reasons that FC Dallas drafted me are confusing, but that's for another day. But no, I had one coach ask me, coming from Stanford, he said, listen, Bobby, you're going to get a $50,000 contract in MLS. You could take your Stanford degree and make twice that right now. Like, how do I know that you're going to show up and be committed every single day? And I looked at him and I said, you know what, sir, that's a fair question. I get that question a lot. But I think anyone that's ever been around me, has ever spent five minutes with me talking soccer on the training field, knows that's not me. And there's no words I can tell you to convince you. And even if I did say words, you'd probably think I was trying to trick you, right? Like, you ask one person that's ever been around me, and I think he'll tell you that I'm pretty committed to this profession and I'm pretty committed to working hard.
Now, in retrospect or publicly, now, were you? I mean, was there any point in this time period where you were thinking, this is something I might do? Or was it always 100% I was going to be a soccer player?
No, I think my whole life, and this comes from having parents who care about academics, my whole life it was school first. You know, you can't go to practice unless you do your schoolwork. I was going to an academic-based college, whether they let me play soccer there or not, didn't matter. So my whole life, it was about academics and setting myself up in case soccer didn't work. And it literally happened that I wanted to go to academic school, and the academic schools wanted me to play soccer. And when I was done with college, you know, the MLS Combine asked me to come. So my whole life, I you know, just planned for options. I don't think that changes whether I was committed to soccer or not, right? Like, I'm just committed to whatever I'm into. If you put me on a soccer field and you give me practice for an hour and 20 minutes, I'll want to show up 20 minutes early and 20 minutes late. And I think that's important for all young professionals to learn, is that, like, whether you fully are committed or not, like, you can still give your all for that year of your contract.
Was there conversations at the combine with other guys about, hey, do you think this is going to work out for you? Are you looking at other stuff? Have you interviewed for other?
No, because everyone there, when you're 22, you think you're going to end up playing for Manchester United, right? Like, you don't understand how, like, hard the profession is. So no, not at all. I think everyone deep down, even when you get drafted, even every freshman that goes to college, even if they're a walk-on, thinks they're going to start. If you get drafted, it could be in the third round, the supplemental round, you still think you're going to be rookie of the year, right? Like, you might be timid and humble, but you still think deep down that you're going to be the next star of Real Madrid.
Of course, guys playing these combine games, we mentioned it, the performances are up and down. Some guys impress, some guys don't. In addition to the likes of Siggy Schmidt and Bruce Arena and all these guys on the sideline, you've got guys like Simon Borg and Matt Doyle and Ivis Garlicev and all these different guys who are grading you and putting out reports. You wrote in the piece about the experience of reading these and how people deal with them. Does everyone read these, or is it kind of mixed? And then how do people react to the varying reviews that they get?
I don't want to say that every professional player, every player reads the reviews, but it's most. You know, especially at a younger age. As you get into it, then you don't read the newspapers, you don't read the blogs. When you're younger, you just want to – you like hearing about yourself. You like reading about yourself. See, I would say most guys read about it. Even if you didn't read about it, then your friends would tell you, especially if you did well. People would say, hey, you got a good grade, you moved up the draft board. But if nobody told you, it probably wasn't good, right? So the fact that, like, enough people read it created, like, that air of people knew what was going on. And it definitely hurt or helped people's moods. You know, if you saw a guy who you had read had moved down the draft board, he would be expectedly somber or quiet or sad. You know, he might, like, try and act normal, but you could just tell that it wasn't quite right with him.
You're a senior in college. You have all your friends who are also going out looking for jobs. You go to a combine, you try out, and you get drafted. They go in, they look for job interviews. Which one do you think is more nerve-wracking? Which one do you think is more uncomfortable?
That's a really good question because, you know, I had a bunch of friends that went into consulting, and those consulting interviews are horrifying. Asking, like, the hypothetical questions, figuring out your thought processes. I think they were way more nervous doing that. Because, like I said, I've played, you know, 1,000, 100,000 games in my life. I've been in the same situation a bunch. So I think it's a good point. I think, like, a lot of my friends were more nervous for their job or interviews than I was for mine.
And what about right now? What are you looking to do? You said you were down in Philly. Of course, you're talking to us, which we love having you as often as you want to come on. But what's the plan?
My plan professionally just wait, right? Like, wait for the phone to ring. I would like to be back in MLS. I think that I have something to offer teams. You know, I left MLS to explore something new. A, to play more after being a young player, kind of being a backup in MLS. And I like to come back and pursue that challenge again. I just wait for the phone to ring.
What's the process like when you're waiting for the phone to ring? Is your agent out there knocking down doors? Are you calling folks? I mean, how does this work for a guy looking to break back in?
You know, I'm not going to lie to you. It's really hard. It's really, really hard. Because one of the things about this job, and I think probably about all jobs, but the one that I'm in, is you just hear a lot of no's, right? Like Tim Tebow said when he got drafted, it's like, I don't need 31 teams to like me. I need one. So that's true. I think, you know, I'll probably get 19 no's, and I just need one to say yes. Or, you know, I might end up with two or three, and then I have to figure out which one. But, yeah, you just – it's hard, man. It's hard, A, like staying fit on your own, waking up and, like, going to do a morning run and going into a gym and, like, doing touches up against the wall in the gym in the afternoon. Like, I love soccer, but it's not particularly fun, like, kicking a ball against a wall by myself. So that part's not fun, but it's also in terms of, like, pride and, like, self-value and self-worth. It's hard waiting for the phone to ring.
There you go. Pick it up, folks. Bobby Warshaw looking for a job in MLS. What, you know.
Listen, Bobby, the Extra Time Radio pickup team, we would value you highly.
Yeah, we might not be able to, I don't know if we have the sort of, like, transfer budget or you know, even a wage budget at all. But
you'll get playing time. That we can guarantee.
I'll demand the number 10 jersey, though. I always wanted the number 10 jersey.
The number 10 jersey is all yours. You can follow him on Twitter, at BWarshaw14. Make sure you read that piece on MLSsoccer.com about his experience in 2011. Bobby, good luck, man. I'm sure we'll be talking to you in the future, all right?
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Big thanks to Bobby Warshaw for joining us here. If you got a job for him in MLS, hit him up. BWarshaw14. By the way, Ladybugs, 14% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So, I have to imagine kicking and screening. Maybe, yeah.
Screaming. So we I always keep say, saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. It's the.
It's Greg's Film Festival.
Yeah, it's Greg's Film Festival. Look, let's.
Which
let's
is
jump.
Awesome.
It is. Let's jump into some MLS news because there's an awful lot of it. The big news on this Thursday, Brad Davis. Headed from Houston to Kansas City. A couple draft picks, some future considerations going that way. I had some questions, Dave, about where he might fit in.
I know.
When I heard this,
yeah.
Twitter went off. They helped convince me that left wing, center mid, he's both a depth piece and a probable starter. A guy that you know what you're getting, although I still wonder about.
Is he a starter?
Yeah, I think he's – look, it's a World Cup veteran. It's a guy who's a six-time All-Star in this league, one of the best left feet in the league. The question
but does
I have,
he cover enough
I
ground?
Know, that's the question I had. Can he play that high-pressure game? But Peter
Vermees – Now, I love the idea of having a change of pace. I like the idea of having a veteran. I like the idea of having a service. I like the idea that they're going to be competing in CCL.
Open Cup. Which they take very seriously.
But it's not a cheap – version no, of those things.
It's not.
And that's what
it's not. But I would guess if I had to take a wild guess, just to be clear, I don't know, Houston probably picking up some of the money,
yep.
You'd have to think, because, you know, for Casey to take him on that, I would think that they'd pick up a little bit of his salary. But a big move for Kansas City, obviously Houston going in different directions. Let's see, out in San Jose, a new face. An old face. Simon Dawkins back with the Earthquakes. He's now a DP with them. Remember, he was there in 2012. That
savior
incredible.
Has
well, I don't know if he was the savior that year.
He
but
feels
eight
like
goals. Eight goals that year.
It feels
year.
Like there's been 4 years of off seasons where the rumors of Simon Dawkins coming back and being a great pickup have been around, and now it's finally.
Is
happened.
It a great pickup?
I have no idea.
People are saying the DP tag is too much.
Probably, but. How do you know he played in the league 4 years ago? So he'll have a little bit of more familiarity with the league than a normal player coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I haven't watched him play 2 minutes with Aston Villa or the few minutes with Derby. I don't know.
He hasn't really played this last season with Derby. The year before, he was a pretty consistent starter for them in the championship. We'll see how it turns out.
He had a good time with them. Hopefully he can again. And maybe it's a little bit of insurance for an innocent.
Yeah. Look, they need goals. There's no doubt about that. Also re-signed Quincy Ameriquois and Jordan Stewart here on Thursday. The Red Bull, the Red Bulls, Big Red, a little bit of a different thing here. Jeff Lorenowitz, he signed as a free agent with the LA Galaxy. Bruce Arena hinted about that one. We're still waiting to see where Mike McGee might go. Of course, Giussi's artist is expected to play forward. Big Red quickly, center back or defensive mid?
I think he's a defensive mid for them, but I think even bigger than that, you bring him in, and now you have the option to find your best option between a center back and a center mid, right?
Point.
You go out there and you're like, between these two, it just gives you a bigger pool. I think he's a center mid because I think he could still play the position. I think he's a true defensive mid that would allow Gerrard to play more attacking.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do play as a 4-4-2, it's a lot of responsibility.
It certainly is. Some reports out there to touch on. One is in Vancouver. Christian Bolaños is expected to sign with the Whitecaps. Costa Rican winger, two-time World Cup player, 31 years old, but seems to have some time on his legs left. Looks
played a long time for FC Copenhagen as a consistent player.
Yeah, I believe was with Saprissa. And remember, there's a couple Costa Ricans on that roster. Brought in Kendall Watson, of course.
He's a guy every USA fan knows as a talented player.
Yep.
He has given production. He's got quality. I think he's going to be able to do it in this league.
Christian Teixeira is locked up. They finalized his transfer from River Plate Montevideo. So he's in with them on a multi-year deal. Of course, a super sub and a great starter down the stretch for them as well. They need goals. There's no doubt about that. We talked about their Japanese import here. Carl Robinson saying, look, that's the deal. We got to score more goals, especially in the second half of the season. Let's see. One that definitely went down, Patrick Nyarko to DC United. Chris Pontius, of course, to Philly from DC. My question to you is, which would you rather have, Patrick Nyarko or Chris Pontius?
If I had my imaginary team that didn't exist.
Well, it exists.
For this year.
In the imagination. But.
Right. Well, no, it doesn't exist.
Whatever.
For this year, I'd rather have Patrick Nyarko. If I was on
injury issues for both.
Right.
if I was working for DC United right now, I don't know, because they're an old team. There's a lot of over 33-year-old players on that team, and Patrick Nyarko does nothing to make that any better. He's a guy who's proven in the league. Sorry, because I couldn't get off the top of my head. He's 20. He'll turn 30 in a couple of days, so he doesn't make that roster younger. He's got speed, but he's not a goal scorer. So I don't know about the upgrade, because Pontius, as much as the injuries are, still has a ceiling.
Yeah.
That might be higher.
If you're DC, I think you go Nyarko, just because Chris needed a fresh start. That's a big part of it for both of these guys. Just a new place, a new drive, a new coaching staff, something to get them off the ground. Good luck to both Patrick Nyarko and Chris Pontius in 2016. Some other quick news: Greg Berhalter, he signed a multi-year extension once again. Happy birthday, Charlie! I bet you're happy about that as well. So he'll be around there for a while longer. Didier Drogba reported to have retired. Reports out of France, and then he tweeted, "Hey, hold on, I have not yet made a decision." So Montreal fans, you guys can continue to sit on the edge of your seats. Who knows what's going to happen with this one? Another rumored deal: Walter Restrepo of the Cosmos, apparently to the Union. We'll see if that one goes down. Kevin Kincaid reporting that, usually very, very reliable with Philadelphia news. And the last bit of news before we get out of here, Dave, I'll let you handle this one: Alan Pulido, rumored to be in advanced talks with the Rapids. Give us the backstory. What's up with Pulido?
You want me to explain what's happening with Alan Pulido?
Yeah, I want the Twitter version
real
here.
Quick. Yeah. He was playing for Tigres in Mexico. He played for Mexico at the World Cup. He's been a good young international player for them. He said that his deal with Tigres was done, and he went to Greece to sign a deal. Tigres said that they extended him. Went to the Court of Arbitration of Sport. They appealed to FIFA. It's been all over the place. Pretty much he's played 6 soccer games in the last 2 years,
oy,
I'd say. He finally actually made an appearance for Olympiacos, who he didn't sign with originally because he couldn't, and then he did, and then he was loaned, and then he wasn't.
And bizarrely, Chivas now has his Liga MX rights.
Of course. I mean, so Chivas has said that they'd be interested in signing him going into this season. I don't know what he brings you anymore, but he was a talented young goal scorer playing for the Mexican national team, so there's clearly some appeal there to all MLS teams. If you can get him on a good deal and get him in shape, he can be a productive player for you, I guess. I don't know. It's just tough to say when you haven't seen a guy play for so long.
Well, let us know what you think. A lot of rumors, a lot going down. Of course, full combine coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com. We are going to give you your fill ahead of the Super Draft on the 14th. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Remember, the best stuff gets in the mailbag, and the stuff in the mailbag I make Dave send various MLS swag too. So hit us up. We're going to jump into that next.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Dave Goss, Andrew Wiebe, we are into the mailbag. Closing out on the show today. Thursday, the MLS Combine coming up next week. The MLS Super Draft, the schedule's out today. LAFC. Boy, it's been a busy week, not to mention all the rumors and all the other hubbub, Dave.
Do you like the rumor stuff, or do you get tired?
No, I always like it. I think it's the part of being a fan that's so fun is, you know, during the season it's very obvious. You see your team perform on the field. Are they good enough? Are they not good enough? This off-season period and all the rumors, that's when as a fan or an observer or whatever you are, a journalist, you get to have a little bit of imagination, and you get to kind of speculate a little bit and say, well, what would it be like if this guy was there? Where should this guy play? It's almost – you get to be kind of manager, GM. I really enjoy it, and I'm okay with baseless rumors.
Right.
I'm cool
completely
with that.
Completely like, baseless
yeah,
when
that's
it comes
fine.
To
yeah.
a lot of soccer reporting.
Yeah, let's have fun with it. Like,
interesting little story I read today is Bayer Leverkusen, along with some other Bundesliga teams, are down in Florida. And they were being asked about MLS and asked about soccer in America and whatnot. And the player that they all kept mentioning was Giovinco. It wasn't Beckham anymore. It was Giovinco.
Wow.
That was the, like, yeah, a guy came here and showed what the level's at and how you can play. And, you know, obviously Chicharito mentioned Dos Santos and the potential of Carlos Vela coming here. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is cool. That is really cool.
I think a change in the way, you know, players are being admired and the league's being seen.
I'm all about the rumors. Let's jump into the mailbag, see what folks are
Well, we got some groundbreaking. We got some cutting edge stuff here. I mean, these are important questions.
Okay.
Joel _P on Twitter. Gift to the crew would be the chance for Gostin Saro to challenge for the Gasman title on ETR.
Ooh, what would the challenge be? How could he wrest that from you?
I mean,
hand-to-hand combat. If it's my title,
and that means that I get to decide,
yeah, I think so.
The
it's
way
your
in
arena.
Which, then I would say a lamb kebab eating competition, which I one time ate 13 kebabs of.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I have a feeling that Gaston Sara, as an Argentinian, would be pretty good at eating meat roasted on a spit.
That's true.
Just
maybe
saying.
Gaston can have it. The other thing is, I've never been the type of person to say there's not enough room in the world
for two
multiple
Gasmans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I remember when you first came on the show, you didn't like that name, but we'll let you hold on to it for now.
I thought it was unoriginal because it is, and I thought I was unimpressive.
Okay. What else we got?
We got Trevor J. Moore, one of our favorites out in Chicago, and he says, all this chatter about Drogba possibly heading back to England and Jermaine Jones has me thinking. Did Chicago Fire actually luck out by not landing either of these guys? At the time, the entire fan base felt unlucky and unloved by these players. Now, Montreal may have given up a lot to Chicago for a half season of Drogba, and New England has paid Jones a lot of money during a lengthy injury and lots of international duty. Should we be happy neither of these players ended up wearing a Fire
kit? I don't know that you should be happy, per se, but I think that you hope, as a Chicago Fire fan, that you're in a good place now. Gilberto looks to be a good center forward up top for you. He's proven he's had a nice little year for you last year. Maybe Nelson Rodriguez will turn things around. Paunovic seems to have his head on straight and is going forward. I think you should be happy about that stuff. Now, should you be happy you missed out on those guys? Maybe not, but they both went to teams that it was a final piece there.
Maybe.
Yeah, probably not. Definitely not. But you know what? To take the edge off, we got some authentic Chicago Fire jerseys over here,
nice,
as well as the little pennants they give out at the beginning of games. That's going to Trevor J. Moore and Joel Juan. Since you seem to be a crew fan, we got some more crew swag to give you. So we got a scarf over there, maybe a hat?
Yes.
All right, we're sending them over. All right, what else we got? Anything else?
Well, I just want to say that I disagree. And Trevor,
say it.
I'm a fan of bad teams, and we try and find ways to say, oh, our life would be worse if blah, blah, blah. I mean, you would have been better if you had those players on your team. But in closing off, we just have a little bit of news, which is two Copa Centenario qualifiers, January 8th, both in Panama versus Cuba and TNT versus Haiti. And congratulations potentially to Louisville City because they might be on their way to a soccer-specific stadium.
Yeah, Louisville talking about perhaps grabbing a specific stadium. And that's an interesting thing because we've talked a lot about MLS getting those.
Yeah.
Has been less so on, say, the USL side, although there are teams that have them.
Well, the league has been committed to new ownership groups having that at least
and
potential.
That's really, really cool. So, look, that's all we have here on this Thursday. Big thanks to Bobby Warshaw, B. Warshaw 14. Check out all the combine coverage,
super
draft coverage.
Super draft heavy next
week. We are right here. We'll see you then.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.